Accession number 27071, Reel 4.
Dennis Till, Reel 4. So, this sort of went on for, what, weeks for you?
Or a couple of months, I would think. Until they everybody moved ashore, you know, inland, and we've got another thing I remember in particular was we had a signal to slip and secure alongside the Rodney. She was off, anchored off, bombarding, you see, with her 16-inch guns. And there must have been a threat from a midget submarine or whatever, you know, so they had landing craft three thick all around the Rodney. There's a tale there. Rodney was decommissioned when I was first joined the Navy, and I was in the R&B, and we got fed up to the back teeth by hearing ex-Rodneyites saying, well, when I was on the Rodney, we did this, that and the other. And of course, I never was on the Rodney, but I did go on the Rodney that night to get fresh provisions. So I could truthfully say I'd been on the Rodney when I was on the Rodney. But we used to tease them unmercifully. There's a saying in the Navy, never talk about your last ship, you know. And but they mustn't have heard, they couldn't have heard it. And
so they were having your LCTs 3D all the way.
Yeah, down. That's
what
right.
What was that, as a buffer? Well, so you got hit?
Well, yeah. I mean, they used to put limpet mines on the side of a ship to blow them up, you know, frogmen. And we thought, well, we were right to think that if you were sufficiently far away from the actual side of the battleship, you might go, but they wouldn't, you know. And Rodney was rather more important than the landing craft. And
how did you get on with your captain all this time? You must have got to know each other quite well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we were on Christian name terms, and my Christian name was Tug at the time, but not called Wilson, I know, but that was it. No, it was Harry and Tug, and we were all, and a lot of the crew too were I don't know about Christian name terms, but because we didn't know their Christian names half the time, but
I suppose you were like some sort of, you were a group, a team, a family, weren't you?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So how long did you stay round the Rodney?
Oh, only overnight, you know, and we went on board at midnight and got some fresh bread and lots of provisions, and because we've been living on what they call compo, you know, tins of stuff, and which wasn't very appetizing.
So, what then? You still shunting backwards and forwards?
Yeah, that's right. And then, as the war moved inland and up there, we then got transferred to a different force. Because the flotillas had broken up anyway, but they formed a Force T. There was Force S I was in before, and for Sword Beach, but this was Force T, and it was being formed at Southampton as a strike force. We go to Valcran.
Oh yes, can you spell that for me?
WALCHERN. It's the island off the mouth of the River Scheldt. We captured the port intact, but we couldn't use it because the Germans were in the island at the mouth of the river.
So tell me about how that all came about as far as you're concerned. I mean, you'd come back from chuntering around.
Yeah, that's town. Right.
And what did they tell you about your next job, or did you get any training?
Well, the Navy was like this. You were plodding to and fro all the time, And then when you got back to Spithead, there was a signal, and I was transferred to another craft. 11:33, I got my first command there.
Oh, right. 11:33,
yeah.
What rank were you now?
Sub-lieutenant.
Still sub-lieutenant.
Yeah, I'm still sub-lieutenant, yeah.
So you were
promote you in the Navy until you've till you've served the time, that minimum time, as it were, for.
So you were given 11:33.
11:33, yeah, which was in a 22nd flotilla.
Right. Mm-hmm. And what sort of a craft was that? Was
this? Well, he's identical. Identical, yeah. Mm.
Right. And do you remember your crew?
Yes, I want to know them all. Mm. My first lieutenant was Connett. He was a midshipman.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, his name Connett.
Yeah, Connett. Mm-hmm. I've got a picture of him here, actually.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And there's 11:33.
Oh, yes, yeah.
This was a newspaper cutting in Portsmouth.
Mm.
And there's the wireman, and there's the coxswain. There's Connett. That's the signalman.
So 11:33 was equipped the same way as 10...
Oh, identical, yeah. And so but we were working up to take the Royal Marines into West Capella, and transferred to a different flotilla.
What were you told about the job? Who briefed you about what this job was?
Well, doing? We didn't know what we were doing until we got to Ostend.
Right.
But we loaded up with Royal Marines and their amphibious vehicles, not tanks, but amphibious vehicles, because they were going. The island of Vulcan had been heavily bombed and was flooded, and they needed amphibious vehicles anyway, you know. And,
so, when the Marines came on board, they came on board when
at you Ostend.
Moved them at Ostend.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
What did their senior officer say to you? He came over, did he? And
well, we had several senior officers on board. I couldn't go in my own cabin. We had the beachmaster, who was RN. We had the I can't remember whether he was lieutenant colonel or major in the Marines, Royal Marines, the Marine Commando, 42 Commando. Mm-hmm. And we had a padre, naval padre, and I don't know. They took over my cabin, you know, and we had am I hesitating too much?
No, I'm sorry. No.
We had a journalist from the American magazine Time and Tide, and he was covering it, you know. I never did see the article that he subsequently wrote, because I was wounded in hospital anyway. Oh. But
did he come and talk to you about what you'd done and what you were going
not
to
not really
do?
No. Well, no. Well, it was a chock-a-block with personnel on board, and I was sort of on the bridge pretty well all the time, you know, conning the ship and trying to keep out of trouble.
So you picked up these commandos in Ostend. Did you stay long in Ostend, or was this just a quick pick up? Or
No, I don't think. We were only there a day or two.
Excuse me a minute.
So you were in you came into Ostend, and were you there for long before you picked
Only a couple of days, and then we loaded up with the Royal Marines and their amphibious vehicles, and then we sailed overnight, I think, to beach at dawn, pretty well.
So how long was this journey?
Oh, wasn't very far from Ostend there, you know.
Were you briefed about whether you were liable to come under fire, or?
Oh, we knew that. We knew that because we all appreciated that this island was held, but we'd been told that it'd been heavily bombed, which it had, but there was very low cloud cover, and we couldn't get any benefit from the Air Force, nor could we get much from the battleships anchored off, you know, out to sea. The Warspite was there, and the Erebus, I think she was a monitor, and we couldn't have the spotter aircraft, which enabled us enabled the guns to, you know, be more effective or most effective.
So
you
went in at dawn.
Yeah.
And were you firing your guns, or?
No, we don't do.
We
went in. Well, not quietly, but we just went in, and we had the beach. It was very different to the Normandy landing because there wasn't a wide beach, you know, so it was very rocky, and you had to sort of fight your way in there. Yeah, we were hit on the way in. We had RASC personnel driving the vehicles, and Royal Marines, you know, were there fighting the vehicles, as it were. And we had a direct hit on one of the vehicles going in, you know, and there was a couple of RSC chaps killed. We beached, got rid of them, kedged off, then the padre stopped on board to see to the casualties, you know, he was a great big chap too, and he wanted me to go back in, so that, you know, and our orders were clear the beach. This is what the beach masters were for. They wouldn't have anybody cluttering up the beach. Once you offloaded, everybody had to get clear out of the way, you see.
Why did he want to go back in?
He wanted to go in to be with his troops. Yeah, he was a naval padre, and he needed to be with the Royal Marines, you see.
Why did he not get off when they did?
Well, because he was attending to the to the casualties. They were dead, actually, two dead men, and he was giving them the last rites and one thing and another. And he just went off the catwalk and swam.
Really?
Bitterly cold. I mean, 1st of November, this was. He just went, just like that.
Because you were astounded, were you?
Eh?
You were astounded.
Rather,
were you?
Yeah. But I knew what my orders were, and I couldn't go back in because there's a follow up coming in after us, you see. But as far as I know, he survived. But I really don't know. But the Marines took tremendous casualties in that event, yeah. And the bank manager I started to tell you about, he wrote this book.
And tell me the name of that book.
Gerald Rawlings. It's Cinderella Operation. Yeah. And I was able to help with bits and bobs of information which he didn't realise, you know. But
how easy was it getting back from Volkeren for you?
Well, it wasn't, because we got sunk. We got mined and sunk. I was wounded. We had a shell on the on the bridge, and I was wounded in shrapnel in my eye and arm. And
where did that shell come from? Do you know?
No, well, obviously from the island somewhere, you know, but we had a direct hit on the bridge, and I was the only one on the bridge, and this is the way it panned out, you know.
And what happened immediately when big noise, you've been hit? What happened immediately?
Well, I was sort of whipped down and shoved in my cabin. Connett, who was the first lieutenant, he took over the ship and took over the craft, and he went alongside a hospital craft where there was a Mark III LCT acting as a hospital craft, and he went alongside her and transferred, well, there were several wounded, but he didn't transfer me, he left me where I was, and when he was pulling away from there, he collided with another craft of the 20th flotilla, and went emergency full astern or something, and as did the other craft, and that set off a mine, and it sank because both of us, you know. And
so what was the first thing you knew about that? That water coming
well,
in?
Well, no. It was an explosion, really, and I had a job getting out of the cabin because the door had jammed, you know, but I got out, and then we were looking to see, you know, gather ourselves together, see what was needed, and we had a craft come alongside us. So we didn't get wet. We just stepped off ours onto theirs, you know. But we lost two of our crew.
Did you?
And we had a telegraphist on board. The first time we'd ever had a telegraphist, and one of the seamen, and the other craft, you know, it was now LCIL came alongside us, that's infantry, large, and took us on board and took us back to Ostend, you know. And I went into hospital there, and then fortunately, there was an eye specialist in the army hospital. And I had immediate surgery, and he saved my eye. So, other things were there. But
so, were there a lot of casualties in this hospital? It's quite a big place, was it?
Yeah, well, mostly army there, you know, because it was an army hospital just behind the lines, I suppose.
Had you known before you went into Walcheren just how dangerous it was going to be?
Not really. No, you just do what you're told. Yeah.
Because you got the DSC, did you?
That's right, that was for me. And the skipper of the other craft that was sunk, he got the DSC. Mm. Nobody else got anything. Well.
Who recommended you, do you know?
Well, the flotilla leader, I suppose, you know. Lieutenant Commander Harcourt. And then afterwards, when I recuperated, and I was in Hasler Hospital for a while, mm-hmm. And then they put me back. Harcourt offered me a craft in the 22nd Flotilla,
right.
Which was 864.
So how long were you in hospital altogether?
Oh, about a month, I should think.
Month.
Yeah, and then perhaps, and I was in Hasler for another month, probably.
Mm-hmm. And how fit were you when you came out after a couple of months off, as it were? Did you get leave or?
Well, I must have done, I suppose.
Europe,
no, mm. I wasn't. I was only in hospital. At Ostend for perhaps a week, mm-hmm. And then we went back to the UK, and then I went into Hasler, which is a naval hospital at Portsmouth, and I don't remember really, you know.
So you then became commander of 864.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
what sort of the craft? Same. LCT.
Just LCT, the same. They're all like peas in a pod, you know. Yeah. And we were still Force T, and we were held as the strike force should have been required, you know.
And this was where at
Southampton. Yeah, mm-hmm. Opposite the new docks.
So we're now, what, into early 45?
That's right, yes. Yeah. Mm.
Did you think the war would end soon? Or?
Oh, yeah. Well, except for the Japanese war, you know, it's we couldn't see an end to that, you know, but the European war was more or less buttoned up. And we were kept as a strike force until that was over, and then we were threatened with going to the Far East, you see. And
what did you feel about that?
Not much, particularly as I'd met and fallen in love with a Wren, a boat crew Wren, at Southampton. And
this was the lady you married?
Yeah. A bit of consternation in my family, not hers. Her mother was ever so. She knew her daughter, presumably, and she thought, well, that's all right. But my mother was a bit het up about it. And,
why was that?
Well, I don't know, but we wanted to get married because I was on a draft ship to the Far East, you know, and we were quite sure of ourselves. And I suppose, to be fair to mother, I'd had another girlfriend, another Wren called Betty, who was in Alexandria, which was a bit far away, wasn't it? And I'd sort of cooled off her, and I don't think she'd ever been really, I don't know, maybe she cooled off me, but unbeknown to me, my mother had been corresponding with her mother, and I think this was it. Remember the first time I took Joan home, and my Aunt Rose, who was this real stirrer, she used to boss everybody about in the family, and she'd, oh, this is Betty, is it? And you knew damn well it wasn't Betty. But and poor old Joan might have marched out on me there and then. But thankfully she didn't.
So you stayed in Southampton there?
Yeah. Well, until the end of the war, really, yeah.
And then when you heard about VJ,
oh, VJ Day, yeah. Well, we had VE Day. I was in Holland for VE Day. Right. Yeah.
Did you manage to celebrate?
Yeah.
What sort of party did they have? Well,
we did, but it was a bit complicated. We had spliced the main brace, which of course is traditional. There wasn't any beer or anything like that. We had some Dutch gin, or it was stone jars, which is awful. We went with a Royal Marine lorry to an inland town to a dance, and I don't know what happened there, I'm sure, but I know I was quite legless when I return to McCraft. And there was a speeches in the local town hall, and lots of boring, long-winded speeches in language which we couldn't understand, but we all joined in there, and we used to be doing eights and reels in the corridor outside. We had a lovely time there.
Yeah. What was the main feeling when you heard about the peace coming to Europe? What was the first feeling that hit you?
Oh, exhilaration. Exhilaration, yeah. No. And then in the back of our minds, with, oh, lummy, it'll be Far East now, you know. And of course, we were an island hopper, aren't we? You know, the landing craft. So we thought we'd bound to be there, which is why we determined to get married when we did, you know, and
so
well, we married the beginning of June, and at Exeter, because Joan was had been evacuated anyway, so she her home was at Lyons-Sea, but she couldn't go there.
No, know. No. Mm. So when the war ended, you were still in Southampton.
No. Yeah, when the war ended, I was in Southampton. Yeah, but I was still not able to leave the Navy, right, you know. Yes. And
so where did you stay there until you left, or?
No, I stayed there a while until the flotilla were disbanded, you know, and then I went to Royal Arthur.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Which was at Corsham, uh-huh. which was a new entry establishment. Uh-huh. I trained a bit with the interviewing new entrants.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
To, you know, we trained in London for that, actually.
Yeah.
And it's in Queen Anne's Mansions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, we were at Corsham. I think it had been an RAF camp previously. Mm-hmm. But Royal Arthur had been at Skegness in Butlin's camp. Mm-hmm. And Butlin's wanted it back. So we had to move to Corsham. And we were interviewing new entries because to see what category they were best suited for. That's the theory.
Yeah.
But the practice was you only had certain categories available. And however talented the chap you were interviewing was, if it was only a cook, he had to be a cook, you know. And it was a bit of a farce, really, you know. And because sometimes you didn't have any seamen or stokers, you just had what you call the periphery, as it were, in the service. And
so, I mean,
you could put someone back on part of ship or the, you know, ship's company if he really was talented in a particular field, you know, radar or something like that. But it was a bit of a farce. But it was a
you
bit of a.
You thought it was a farce at the time, did you?
Yeah.
But
you
went along with it.
Well, you've got no option, have you? You know. And I was very much into athletics then. I was 3-miling for a Portsmouth command, and that's like, and it was a lovely life, really.
Were you tempted to stay on?
No. No.
Why not?
I don't know. Well, we were married then, and I didn't. I mean, staying on would have meant being sent right, left, and centre. You didn't know where you'd land up, you know. And married quarters were pretty well non-existent anyway. No, I wanted to come out of service, you know, when my time was up, and I was made up to the lofty rank of lieutenant about a week before I was discharged. It was all right because I had the pay that went with it, you know, and the pension, that because they paid your pension for a period, you know, and
how much notice did you get of being discharged? Were you
not at all, really. Oh. You knew when you. You all had a date for discharge, and you just that fluctuated because it depended on their needs. If they needed personnel, they'd slow it up, and if they didn't need personnel, they would accelerate it. And so I was actually discharged in December 1946.
Dennis Till, end of reel 4.